Unreal 12. You were put into the signal section. What kind of training did you get?
Well, you learned the Morse code, you did flat bill and
heliograph. Was the heliograph an efficient instrument?
Oh, yes. Especially out there with a lot of sunshine and all the time.
And what was the principle of its functions? How did it work?
Well, with the sun on it, and you just pressed a little bit and you had a flash.
It was a shiny surface or something?
Yes, me too.
But presumably whoever you were signaling to would have to be able to see that signal of yours.
Oh, yes.
What kind of distance could it work over?
Long way away. Oh, yes. No, if it, nothing in between, you could signal as far as possible.
Was it based on the Morse code? Was it a visual
Morse
code?
The same, yeah. Morse code.
Flags, how did they work?
Oh, you used to go through the alphabet.
Semaphore.
Yeah. In fact, the single sergeant, he's a mate of mine now. I meet him at reunion. Only after I have to go up to talk to him because his eyesight's gone. I think maybe reading this here, heliograph in that type of building, which room.
The distance that flags could operate over, what would that be? Effective distance?
Oh, quite a long way, because they have the binoculars to read, you see.
Did you do any work with field telephones?
No, not at that time, no. That came later.
Yeah. And radio wouldn't be in then, was it?
No.
You'd have to go out, presumably, into an open area to practice all this. How many was in the signal section?
I think there'd be about 30. I think each platoon had the same work when they went out on training, you know.
Was being a runner also a member of the signal?
Yeah. Yes,
party.
I'd like to be running.
How was it spread out between the battalion there, the signal section? Presumably there'd be so many at headquarters.
That's right.
And then there's the company headquarters.
Yes.
How did it work?
And then a signaler with each platoon.
And did it work effectively?
Yes.
When had you gone into the signal section?
Oh, I couldn't say actually. I think I went maybe 36 or 37.
You were up in Kashmir and you said you weren't there long. Where did you move to then?
I moved back to Fotopar.
So this is 1939, and presumably around this time it was before any fighting had started in Europe. It'd be the phony war period, was it?
Well, we'd be there for the cause. I said we were up in that field station when war was declared. So that would be getting on to 39. Then we moved again. We moved down to Jubalpur.
What are we doing down there?
Eternal security again. It was the best station we had because the married quarters had no need to go up there as the climate was better. And it was a nice station, accordingly.
Was it
a pit, but we weren't there that long.
Was it a good camp, good barracks?
Good barracks, yes. As I say, the climate was better.
Whereabouts in India was this?
It's down in the, getting towards Madras, somewhere down there. And
You mentioned that Gandhi began to cause problems at some point in time. Did you get involved in that?
Well, actually, we supplied a company to go to Nagpur. Now, that was the art of Gandhi's gathering, you know. And there was a fort there, and there was the biggest mosquitoes I've ever seen, although they didn't cause malaria. They were as big as flies, the mosquitoes. And things were getting out of hand. Some of our lads went out, and I think they chased them back in. It's comical, this, because there was a RA fellow instructor there. He had a field gun, and he instructed us on this field gun, and the field gun was pointing at the gates, the entrance of the fort, so if the Indians had come, we would let a shot off. But I think we would have blown ourselves up. I mean, we hadn't had that much instruction, but that was the root of it, isn't it? We just got motorised. We got these sheds, what they call sheds.
Trucks.
We just got motorised at Jogalpur, because they take us in these trucks to Nagpur. That's the first time we got to motorised.
Did you personally get involved in any riots or civil unrest?
Well, yes, there was one case of civil unrest. There'd been trouble in a village. I think they'd killed a policeman there. And we set off. I was picked with about maybe two or three of us. There was the Indian magistrate. There was the commissioner, land commissioner, and, you know, looked after the law on that. And we were on this here bogey on the railway. You know, you've seen that bogey that go up and down. Only we had about six Indians pushing us, you see, to this here village. We were the advance party. And I remember this here commissioner saying to this magistrate, he said, "Now, are you going to give the order to fire if these lads get attacked?" And of course, Adam just said, "Well, it will be all right. They will not be attacked." We didn't give the order to fire, you know. He would have lasted a day, you see. Anyway, we got there, and every village had what they call a dak bungalow where travellers can stop. So we stopped there till the main company came up. And then we went round the village and we rounded them all up, the men. And the women all got in a cluster. It was like the Wailing Wall in Jerusalem. And they marched them off to the next town, to jail. And there they were. I saw these Indian policemen hitting them with these, trying to get information out of them. But evidently, there'd been a big cheese there in this village, and they'd had an eye on him for a long time. He was causing trouble. But I remember these women looking down and wailing away left.
Did you have to use any physical efforts yourselves to get them to move?
No, there was Indian police with us and all around, got around it, all the men.
And it was the Indian police that were using the canes?
No, they were using the canes on them. Yes.
And this would be about what time? After the war started. But
yes, after the war started. As I say, we had to start to be a bit more stricter. Because if we did go out, as I said, we used to go out with one round. Now we never went out with automatics, but we went out with automatics and we went out with rounds, now live rounds. I wasn't on one of these, but one of the lads came in and he was delighted. He says they were up on the roof there, he says, and he says, I was firing at them. They were getting their own back on them, you know. But You see, Japan was advancing that quick that day, and now...
So we're right forward now into, what, 1942, early 42?
Yes.
So you were still in India when the Japanese came into the war?
Oh, yes, yes. Yes, I had a map up on the wall, and with the paper I could see how far they were advancing every day.
And it was all internal security work until the Japanese came closer?
It was still internal security until they came right.
Were you? Was the Indian Army increasing in size over this period of time?
Oh yes, yes. Oh, they were recruiting left and right.
And were there any problems with this? Were they coming forward in sufficient numbers?
No problems.
And there quite a number of Indian troops, of course, being sent over to the desert.
I had quite a lot of them over there. Yes. I did go on leave from this Jubalpur. From the Army, we went to Madras. And we stayed in the Salvation Army hostel. And there was two lads there. They'd been stationed in Madras, but their regiment had been ordered up onto the Iraq frontier somewhere there. And one of them come back, he was going to marry one of these Anglo-Indians. He'd come all the way back from there and been granted leave. We mucked in with them. I thought, my lad, they was letting you sell in for some of the, because she was nothing like. And funny enough, he mentioned an officer up there, Walton. I said, yes, that was our officer, Colonel Walton. He'd come on up there. At any rate, he knew Madras, so he took us round and he took us to the race course. And he said to me, they were lining up, he said, which horse would you back, which do you think would win, like? Well, I said, the grey one. And down with all it came up, you see. He said, my God, you know your stuff, like. And I didn't at all, I knew nothing about horse racing. I never backed a new win, you know. Anyway, we stayed at this hotel, me and my mate. There were a lot of Navy there, they were stopping there too. And my mate gone with this Anglo-Indian. And we were having dinner once in this hostel. And one of the Salvation Army people came up and said, there's a telephone call for my mate. So I went to the telephone. And when he come back, I said, what was it like? He said, it was her. She said she's worried, she was passing blood. He said, I said, what did you say, like? I said, didn't your mother ever tell you anything? And he, so, we had a good time at Madras. It was a nice place to be in, man.
Could you move around freely? Or do you always have to be one or two or a number of you?
Yes. Oh, I forgot to tell you, the uniform, you know, that some bright spark ought to save in a few inches of the uniform. The
putty?
No, putty, the, you know, your uniform, what is it?
The blouse and battle dress, is that, doesn't it?
Yeah, your KD. Oh, your KD trousers, you always wore them at night. So some bright spark, sort of shaving a bit of that. So what they did, they cut so much off the bottom, and you roll it up to here.
Your knees.
Your knee, with buttons. And at night time, you roll it down into your socks, you see, like that. Well, it looked terrible, like, I mean, after being a smart uniform, it looked like, I don't know what. Our colonel decided that wasn't going to be on, like he wasn't going to have us clean out like that, you know. like four plus fours or something like that, it wasn't looked after. So he said if so much money if we contributed, say, a few real peas, we could go to the tailors and get a white uniform. So we got a white slacks, white shirt, and real smart it was, you see. And we were wearing this down in Madras. We got only two lasses, mate. We said, what are you in, mate? We said, Australia. We're Australians. It's no better. And we got on well with them. And also staying at, you see, Australia's Salvation Army, was a Frenchman. He'd been into the Merchant Navy. He was stranded. He couldn't talk English or anything. So we said, we'll take you to where you can talk to somebody who knows French. We took him to brothel. And he had a good talk with her because he could talk all sorts. And he got on well with her.
Did you go to brothels yourself?
Oh, yeah.
How were they run?
Oh, yeah, just pick which last you wanted, and that was that.
They were all on display, in effect.
Yes, on display, yes. And the madam was there, like.
And of course, you still were supposed to take the preventatives or the.
Oh, yes. They sold me one. I paid through the nose for it.
Were the native population in the area that you're now in, were they any more friendly than others that you'd met?
Oh, they were all right, yes, yeah. I once went to into a kind of cafe, and there was this, like a big rat. I forget what the problem, but like a big rat. And this lad who knew all about him, he said, don't go near them. I saw a dead one outside as well. It was like a big cat.
Were these supposed to be tame creatures?
No.
What other of the delights did Madras offer you when you went?
Not that much, like. We could go to pitches, and I said it went to race course. And
bars and clubs and things, did you get into bars and clubs and
no,
that kind of thing?
No.
Presumably the officers would have their own areas. And during this pre-fighting time, before war really did reach you, and you were in India, it was basically much the same that you'd been doing all over the years?
Yes, except for this bit of unrest, you would have thought we were still at peace in India, we were doing nothing. I would have thought we were doing a lot more like training than that.
You didn't go into anything like jungle training?
You don't understand why Singapore fell, like, because they just carried on, you know, as though they were still...
Until the Japanese actually started the war, you were in a relatively quiet area.
Yes.
So they didn't train you in jungle warfare or anything like that, did they?
Not at all. No.
Weapons, had they changed? Had they been modernised in your battalion? Was anything new coming through?
Before we left Meerut, the 1721st Lancers were, they lost their horses and became a tank regiment. That would be 1937.
And were you getting anything new? Were you getting any anti-tank guns? And have you known?
No, not at all. No.
Was the battalion reorganised on the lines of the army in Britain, that you had a headquarter company with specialist units in it?
Oh, yes.
Mortars?
And mortars, yes.
What size mortars did you have? Just the 2-inch ones?
Yeah.
Didn't have any 3-inches in a special section?
No. I tell you, we came back to England in our old uniforms.
Carriers? Did you get any? Had you got any carriers?
No carriers, no. Not till we got to Jumbo, did we get any transport?
And those were trucks, of course.
Then we lost it straight away because we were ordered back to Frontier. And this regiment that came to take over was a... Oh, I'll tell you, we were doing training and there was this regiment that had just come out from England. And of course, this young-faced lad from this other regiment, they must have told him, show him what you can do. There's a regular battalion in front, show him what you can do. And we just fell out like, and we were just resting, and he come through us like a dose of salts. And we gave him a clap like. But when we got up to go, it wasn't long before we came across him, he was laid flat out. You can't do that, couldn't say from England and go like that. Any rate, this regiment came to take over. It was a new regiment, young soldiers. And one was mourning, and I was mourning too. I said, I've been out here nearly 8 years, I said, and this is the best station I've had. I said, and now we're going back to the worst station. I gave him the dressing down. So we ended back at Razmak.
You went back up to Razmak?
Yeah.
Was there any reason for this, or was it just a normal kind of changeover?
Well, we're the only regiment that has on that wall 2 years. All the rest of them cap badges is 1 year. I suppose they kept us there for... I don't know what reason they sent us back up there, but...
Same routine when you got there?
Pardon?
Same routine when you got there?
Same routine. I think it was the back end when we were there. And just then, an order came out that the people who'd done 8 year, I think it was called the Python Scheme, I've heard it said Python Scheme. You could... return to England if you wanted. I could have still stopped out there. So I put my name down to go come back, and I think it would be Christmas 42 when I was on the way down from the north. It was 12 men a regiment who could have been out there, could return every month, 12 men from each regiment. And I remember the day, there was one lad who just come out who'd been in the cadets with me. And he saw me and he shouted my nickname, so I knew he was from there, like. So I was due for, by the guard duty, no. Put inline patrol. So we went down, I went with him down to the bazaar and we bought a bottle of whiskey and we shook that and he went to bed. And I was due for the inline picket. Well, the inline picket went across to where it was supposed to be, like, and they were, where's Carter? I said, I'll be across when I'm out of time, like, I'll be across. And I went across. It was my last night. And one that young lad said to the other, he's going home tomorrow. And he said, oh, when has he been out here? He says, 8.5 years. And he says, he deserves to go home. So we set off. I think it was Christmas.
I've got to ask you, and I should have done, were you part of a brigade and a division in India?
Oh, yes.
What were they?
I couldn't tell you what number it was, but they're all in brigades and divisions. So I mean, Razmak was the Razmak Brigade. That was named the Razmak Brigade.
So leaving India, looking back on your Indian experiences, so what are your best memories of India?
Well, I'll tell you, when I first went out there, I was pretty sick. But as the time went on, you got acclimatised, and things had eased up a lot. You could wear civvies, church parades were voluntary, and all that. It began to be a lot easier, and of course, the more you were there, the more you mixed in with the lads, and you got probably knew everybody.
Although you were obviously wanting to get back, it must have been a wrench to leave your pals.
I've seen some men nearly cry. Yeah. Did I tell you about some marching up I did, and one came out at guard room and joined his mates? Well, yes, I've seen some of them nearly in tears leaving the mates.
And you had a particular mate, a particular friend, you were saying?
No, I had a particular friend, yes.
Did you leave him?
No. Devil left me. He stopped me from having a stripe, and when I got back to Richmond, there he was, a full corporal. Yeah.
What are your feelings about the Indian people over those years?
Well, I think if we could have talked the language a lot better, we'd have gotten better.
But you didn't get too close to them.
No, I didn't get close to them. But looking at it now, we could have had a better conversation with them and talked. A pity they didn't. Mind the officers always had a lesson in Indo. And I think you could put in for a lesson in it. That's a certificate.
And that pre-war army, you did mention a very strong snobbish break between men and officers at that time, well, you know, in your time, between the wars. Was it pretty bad? Were the officers very aloof most of the time?
No.
Class distinction, you might say.
No, there wasn't a lot, right? No. No, some officers you got to like very well. Yeah. So you knew the bad habits, you know, when you went on guard, what he was looking for. He would have a certain, you know, he always had, he'd pick a man up for stick guard. He was a stick man. Seven men would mount guard, quarter guard. One would be picked as a cleanest and smartest, and he'd act as guard orderly. And you knew sometimes that this officer was orderly officer, he had a certain fad, you know. Say, he'd look at your rifle, or in the butt of your rifle if you had oil in your back. They all had the fads, you see. You got to know them all. You all strive to be stick man because you didn't go on guard, you see.
Was there a conscious feeling amongst the men that they were defending the empire, as against this was just a job that you joined and you got on with it?
Yeah, I think all they worried about Rome on my time. That was mental.
The king and country wasn't.
No, Rome on my seven.
And you left on over Christmas, I think you said 1942. You must have left either just about or just before the Japanese war started. Had it started when you were still there?
It started.
It was early December, of course. Yes, had you thought that? Obviously had thought that. Well, I'm going to be fighting at this end and not back home.
Oh yes, I thought to myself, I'd rather fight the Germans than the Japs. Yeah.
Did you sail from India or fly?
Well, there was 12 of us. We left Razamak. We stopped at Lahore because we knew Lahore very well. The train stopped there for the bridge. And I knew an Anglo-Indian there. I went to see her. And then we we were on the train again to Bombay. And we were in a transit camp there at Bombay for about a month.